Accession number 27083, reel 51.
I had to go, but it wasn't a job. I had to go abroad on certain visits. I had to go to Berlin. There was a thing called Live Oak, and we had a small team of staff there. I was really scratching to go to places where I wouldn't get in the way with the army, and so on. I paid a couple of visits to Oman, which was interesting, and that was good. I called on the Sultan. I did various things there. And the only thing that really is perhaps worth mentioning was the fact that I got bitten, if that is the right word, by an affinity with the Omanese. And for the first time in my life, I reckoned I fully understood what had got, who was that famous chap in World War One?
Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence, yes. And his feel for the locals. I understood that. They were a remarkable lot. They varied enormously, but it was a great experience. I also had to go to Belize because there was a bit of trouble there, and so I got around a bit, but these were not really very earth-shattering tasks. I did other things back home in UK. And I remember that I can't remember who it was, but it was an air supply element, and they were RAF, and they had just been moved from wherever to Bryce Norton, and these were huge and very experienced NCOs, and they paraded. There were about six or eight of them, and they paraded in a single line, and I went down the line and had a word with each, and these were very, very senior NCOs, and about number two or number three, and they were all in full kit and so forth. I think they were the para-jumping lot, I think. And they said, "When do you make your last jump, sir?" And being an honest guy, I said that I had never actually done such a thing. "Ah," said this fellow, "when are you going to, sir?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And I waffled about my program, which was almost non-existent, really. And he said, "Oh, you shouldn't worry about it, sir. We did the Prince of Wales last week. We did him off Plymouth Sound, and we had him out of the sea almost before he got his feet wet." And there was I, sort of getting deeper and deeper into the mire, and thinking that I'm practically incapable of swimming, and so forth. But I had contracted to go along with us. Again, because I felt I couldn't, in the circumstances, say no. And so a date was made.
And this is 1978?
This is 19...
1977.
Yeah.
So you're only a whisker...
Or even 76.
You're 54.
Yep.
And you're going to... you're 54 and you're about to jump out of an aircraft into the sea.
Yes.
Right.
And I wasn't looking forward to it. And I didn't have to do it, because the week before I would have done it, I had to go off to Belize, and that wasn't my fault. So there we were. Well,
so you avoided jumping into the sea because you had to go to Belize.
Yeah, the moment had passed.
Right.
And that was it. And I didn't send them a reminder.
Well, before we move on, can you tell me, because I do remember that there were problems with the Guatemalans,
yep.
who, if I remember correctly, had some degree of U.S., I wouldn't say support, but certainly a degree of sympathy in the State Department for the Guatemalan position. And I just wondered what you had to do in Belize.
I can't remember exactly what my task was, but it was to generally size up the situation and report and so forth. And I got a bit of flying in there, in helicopters and so forth. It didn't amount to very much. In fact, looking back on it, I'm not quite sure why I was sent, even. The next thing that happened was that Michael Carver was relieved by a delightful airman called Andrew Humphrey, who I had previously met when he'd been AOC&C Strike Command. And the day came, he had, I think he'd been rather chivied up by my own people to give me something to do. And the day came when, which he'd undertaken, and he'd only been in office for a very short time. And his PSO, who was the same one for continuity reasons, as had been with Michael Carvin, who I got to know very well, a delightful brigadier called Rayleigh Guy, and came one, whatever it was, I think it was probably a Friday, and Andrew Humphrey was taken ill. Well, okay. And the chiefs weren't due to meet until the Tuesday. And on the Monday, when normally the Andrew Humphrey would have been briefed, but he wasn't in the office, and he was still unwell. And I forget what happened, whether the chiefs' meeting was cancelled or whether I took it or whatever. But anyway, he wasn't present. And it was at about that stage in the evening when Rayleigh Guy, his principal staff officer, came in to me and said, "Sir, I hesitate to ask you this, but in the, I hope, very unlikely event, but in the event that Andrew Humphrey, the CDS, were to die, who should relieve him?" And without hesitation, I said, Chief of the Air Staff, who was, I'm forgetting all my names again, but it doesn't matter. He'd only recently taken over because Andrew Humphrey had only recently vacated it. And this satisfied him. And I said, it's terribly important that you keep the rotation going.
So well, an airman takes over from an airman.
What?
So an airman would take over from an airman, that's what you mean?
No, so that the post of CDS, and it was the Air Force's turn.
Yes.
And it had only been filled by the Air Force by a couple of weeks or so.
Yes. No, that's what I meant. Yes. So that another airman would
airman should take over.
Yes.
Neil Cameron was the other one. But he'd only got that couple of weeks in office, sort of thing. And at that point, Edward Ashmore intervened, well, before this happened, on the Thursday or the Friday that week, Andrew Humphrey died. And Edward Ashmore intervened and said that he considered it quite wrong for the new Chief of the Air Staff, because he'd hardly done any time there, to take over CDS. He should take over for at least a year, and then it could go back to the Air Force and so forth. And in fact, that's what was done. I couldn't help remembering when Michael Letourneau, just about to take over as CDS, had gone sick. And Peter Hill Norton had taken over, having been First Sea Lord for a very, very short time. But he didn't have to contend with Edward Ashmore then. So there it was. Well,
Edward Ashmore, of course, was First Sea Lord at this point.
He was First Sea Lord, yes. Well, the next incident of note was, and I may say he stirred up everybody, he upset the entire central staff, rather unnecessarily, I thought, that everybody went round wringing their hands and so forth.
During Ashmore's CDS ship, if I can call it
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah. And there we were, but that was the position. Then
I'm going to have to ask you, how did he upset people? What did he do that upset people?
He was very arrogant and he was very dogmatic, and he was brusque and was always right and everybody else was always wrong. And I can put it no more succinctly than that. And it was not a happy setup, I'm afraid. And then one day, he and others were present, and so was I, in the Holy of Holies, right down the bottom of the MOD, for some frightfully highly classified and exclusive and code word and all the rest of it, briefing by the intelligence people. I got down in good time because I was really in boots of the party. And little Fred Mulley was then the Secretary of State for Defense, and he was coming and he was going to do this. And of course, if he didn't actually fall asleep, he lost attention in the course of the lecture. That's another matter. And shortly before the meeting and the briefing started, Edward Ashmore hauled me out into the corridor and said that John Treacher, who was then the CNC fleet, wanted to retire early and he wished me to relieve him. And I was over the moon, of course, because I thought I was finished. And so the way was clear for me to go to Northwood as CNC fleet. And I had two things to do before I left ECDS. One was I realized that the hernia that my friend in Hasler had missed in my previous job was a bit bigger. And realizing that as fleet commander I would spend half my life at the end of a helicopter strop, I thought I'd better get this cleared up. So I did the necessary, and into Hasler I went. And in those days, unlike the curious advertisements you see in the third page of the Times weekly nowadays, that says you go in and you're out in 2 hours and there's practically no anesthetic and blah, blah, blah. In those days, you were in for at least a week, and you weren't fit, really, to return to duty for 3 weeks. And that was that. And when I got back, the annual NATO exercise, Wintex, was about to start. And as VCDS, I was virtually in charge of that. And I wasn't really fit to come back, but still, there it was. And I had a very difficult time with my new Chief of Defense Staff. You know, the scenario was the usual sort of thing, with trouble coming from further up north and all that. And there was a situation where internationally other countries were havering and sitting on the brink and so forth, and not really making their minds up. And for these sort of exercises, the politicians did not participate at all, which is very bad of them, because for real they wouldn't have known what to do and so on. You can't just jump in code and expect to get it right. And because of that, I instructed the Standing Naval Force Atlantic to proceed to the area for the very good reason that it would get a lot of countries involved. And this occurred in the middle of the night, and in due course the telephone rang, and it was CDS on the phone.
This is Edward.
Saying...
This is Edward Ashmore.
Yes. Saying this was a political matter and it was not my business. And I said, but the politicians aren't playing. So somebody has to stand in for them. And anyway, I'd done it. And he didn't like it. And I felt rather better then. And that really is the last I've got to say for my time as VCDS. I made a number of friends in the central staff. They were a very good lot. There's one living down the other side of this village now, and so on. But it was a non-job, and I was very glad to get out of it.
So by a stroke of good fortune, in a way, caused by, ultimately, by the very untimely death of the Royal Air Force's Chief of Defence Staff, the consequences were that you became C&C Fleet.
No, it was nothing to do with the demise of Andrew Humphrey.
But did his demise not set off the chain of...
No, it didn't, because my predecessor, C&C Fleet, was going to retire.
John Preacher.
John Preacher, yes. And I think he felt, I think he'd asked the question to Admiral Ashmore, the first Sea Lord of the day, was he, Preacher, going to relieve he, Ashmore? And was told, no, he wasn't. And therefore said, well, in that case, I'll go sooner rather than later. That's what triggered it.
Right.
And he went off to run the Bunny Club or something equally curious. And I went to Northwood as C&C Fleet.
A fine swap. So, Henry, shall we stop there this evening?
I think we might, yes, good point.
And then we can start next Wednesday with your time as C&C Fleet.
Yes.
Thank you very much.